Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining this, the 56th Peer Insight Research Meeting. This is Dave Vellante, and I'll be your host today. The topic for discussion this morning slash afternoon is reducing data center costs through improved energy efficiency. Now, this session was started at SNW last fall as a panel, and the feedback we received was so good that we've decided to continue the discussion here on Wikibon, and we're very pleased to have on the call today at least three and perhaps four excellent guests. Daryl Molitor is the senior architect at J.C. Penney, a senior architect and knows a lot about storage. Phil Bullinger is executive vice president of Ingenio Storage Group at LSI. Ken Osterberg is director of enterprise PLM portfolio strategy at Seagate. And Claude Barrera is a distinguished engineer and chief technical strategist at IBM Systems and Technology Group. So welcome to our panelists. As most of you know, the Wikibon Peer Insight is a bi-monthly conference call where we talk about how technologies align and support the development of end-user business capabilities. For those who are not speaking early in the call, not one of the panelists, please mute your line. If you don't have a mute button, you can hit 4-star to mute and 4-star to unmute if you want to participate, which everyone is welcome and encouraged to do. We'll give plenty of time for Q&A on this call. This call is also being recorded and will last 1 hour. So as I said earlier, on wikibon.org, we've put up some metrics that might be useful to set the context for today's call. So if you go to wikibon.org, look for the link right at the top of the page that says Storage Energy Consumption Metrics for Today's Peer Insight. And there are two slides in there that we shared at SNW, both the results of surveying Wikibon users. The first shows IT equipment as a percentage of data center energy consumption, and it's similar to the green grid metrics that they've shared. The results are similar, and the methodology is similar. It shows basically that IT accounts for around one-half of the energy consumption in the data center, which means the other half, PDUs and crack units, lighting, et cetera, isn't directly serving the business. As you can see, storage counts for somewhere between 10 to 15% of the total, and you can even double that if you allocate it back to account for the non-IT gear that is there just to support the IT gear. So the point is that attacking just the crack and PDU is only attacking half the problem. If you can attack the IT equipment and the technology, you get a double whammy. On the second slide is what we call the storage blame pie, and as we all know, the big culprit is spinning disk, so Ken, it's all Seagate's fault. Now, why are we here? Well, we're all familiar with studies like the one from McKinsey, which indicate that data center energy consumption doubled in the first half of the decade, and others have predicted that if left unchecked, data center energy costs will approach nearly 20% of all data center OPEX within the next 5 years. So with that as background, I'm going to introduce each of our panelists and ask them to tell us a little bit about themselves, share with us what's been going on in your worlds of green since last fall. I'm going to start with Daryl, but before I do, let me just ask, is Claude on? Okay, well, we'll get a hold of him and make sure he joins the call. So let's start with Daryl. Daryl, tell us a little bit about yourself and what's been going on over at JCPenney and where energy efficiency fits in your organization.
All right. Tell me a little bit about myself, huh? All right. I've been around forever. I'm one of those guys that's got the gray hair and been around forever. I've done everything from application coding to mainframe sysgens, and now I do virtually all things storage. And as you said, I am a IT architect, and basically for the last number of years, I've really been guiding the JCPenney storage environment as far as futures and where we're going with it. And so that's probably about enough about me. Do you want me to jump into what we're doing here before you introduce the rest
of
the folks?
Why don't you set the tone for us? Tell us sort of what you're doing and what's driving the initiatives, where energy efficiency fits.
Okay. I'm going to do kind of a top-down with JCPenney, then the data centers, and then the server storage arena. And I'll try to be quick about it as far as the ancillary information. From a JCPenney corporate standpoint, and the bulk of that is the stores, we spent over $100 million to improve our energy efficiency. We're trying to become ENERGY STAR certified across the board. And to that end, we have a handful of stores last year, and they were the first ones in the industry to become ENERGY STAR certified. And our plans are to have at least 200 more ENERGY STAR certified by the end of 2011. Eventually, all of them will be certified. And some of the things we're doing, we're retrofitting our store equipment. We're replacing HVAC units with high efficiency. We're installing monitoring and control, remote monitoring and control systems that are going to improve our efficiencies. One of the big things, in addition to the HVAC, is new lighting system. We're going through the stores replacing, retrofitting our lighting systems, and that's an estimated cost savings right now of the stores we've done, right around 200, of over 27 million kilowatt hours per year. We're doing some experimentation. We're putting solar panels in California and New Jersey on some of our stores. We're hoping to generate some electricity there and avoid, you know, some emissions, improve our power capabilities. We're putting one of our distribution centers out in the west in Reno. We're putting wind turbines on the distribution center. And these are the small, efficient rooftop models, not the big towers that we all are familiar with. So we're doing some things there. Our home office in Plano, Texas, is ENERGY STAR certified and has been since in the 90s. From a data center standpoint, they're doing a lot of things. Some of them small, but they all add up. They've implemented the coal locks on floor tiles, for example. They've implemented hot-cold aisle design in the server area. And like the stores, we're replacing our HVAC units. We're replacing 20-ton units with 30-ton units. And we are reducing our energy consumption by 40%, even though we're improving our capacities. We've sealed all the air leaks. We've installed heat monitoring systems. And doing these things, the data centers have been they've raised their ambient temperature by 2 degrees. This allowed them to raise their ambient temperature by 2 degrees. Next year in their plans is to install its product, and I don't know if I can legally say this, but I will. It's called Fluid Dynamics, it's software that's going to help them manage the airflow much better. From a lighting standpoint, they're doing the same thing as the stores. They've replaced their lighting with new technology, and it's a 2-year buyback to pay for itself, and that's a beautiful thing as far as we're concerned. From just a cleanup standpoint, eliminating old unused servers, old unused equipment that was taking up floor space, that was taking up power, they've had initiatives there. So that's what the data centers are doing. From a server standpoint, we're a big believer in virtualization. And so right now we're running between 400 and 500 VMware images. We average around 18 to 20 images per ESX server. And so we're between 400 and 500 right now, and we're hoping to be between 700 and 800 by the end of the year. In the AIX arena, we're also a big believer in virtualization. We are running well over 200 images on 7 big either AIX or Solaris platforms. And so all of our new images are going on LPARs. We're using VIO wherever we can, and the standalone servers as we can through attrition, you know, lease expirations, that type of thing, we're converting them to the virtual arena. From a disk standpoint, we are a 3-tiered virtualization environment, and we're roughly 1,500 SAN ports. And let me give you last year's number, and then I'll tell you the changes. We have about 500 terabytes of Tier 1 and roughly 450 terabytes of Tier 2. And at the time last year, we were only about 25 terabytes of Tier 3. and we had roughly 200 terabytes virtualized. We are an SVC, IBM SVC shop, and we are virtualizing all of our Tier 2 and all of our Tier 3. So what were we planning on doing with I'll tell you what we were planning on doing last year and then where we stand this year. So from an energy saving standpoint, we said we were going to replace all of our 73 gig drives and 146s on the Tier 1, and we were going to have 146s going forward, and that's what we have done. Any new Tier 1 is all 146s. We've eliminated the 73s. We said in the Tier 2 that we were going to replace whatever we had, which was virtually all 146s. So anything new coming in now is all 300s in the Tier 2 arena. And just as an FYI, all of our Tier 3 is terabyte drives. So what we've been able to do, we've decreased, in addition to moving up the ladder in our drive sizes, we have decreased our Tier 1 requirements, moved it from Tier 1 to Tier 2. We've decreased that by about 12%. We're increasing our Tier 3 by about 47% this year, so we're putting more and more in Tier 3. The other thing that we're doing, we said we were planning on looking at solid state. We were apprehensive last year because of the price. As of yesterday, I had a briefing yesterday with one of our vendors. Their price has been reduced on a solid state from when they introduced it to this point, about 75%. The price has dropped. So later this year, we are going to do a proof of concept with solid state. And our goal for next year, next time we do a purchase, is to have pretty much all of our Tier 1, whatever the Tier 1 purchase will be, to be on solid state. There's two things have happened. The price has dropped, and the solid-state drives have gotten larger. They're up to like 400 gig drives now. So those are two encouraging things. And I believe by the end of the year, and talking to some of the storage vendors, I believe that by the end of the year, solid-state drives will be cheaper than 146 gig drives, gigabyte per gigabyte comparison. So we are definitely going to move that direction because the savings in the environmentals are tremendous if you go to solid state. So where I believe we're going to end up with our drive technology is where it's going to be an interim step, but we're going to have solid state. We're going to have like 146s or 300s for a middle class, and then probably 1 or 2 terabyte drives for the Tier 3 type stuff. And I think that's going to be a short term. I think within a matter of 2 to 3 years, we will have solid state drives and Tier 3 drives, probably 2 to 4 to 8 gigabyte or terabyte Tier 3 drives. So,
hey, Darryl,
anyway.
That's fantastic. You guys have been busy since the last SNW.
Busy. We've been busy. Let me quickly finish up here. I know I'm babbling a lot, but let me quickly finish up.
Great.
We said we're moving to larger arrays. We have done that. We have moved from anywhere from 15 to 25 terabyte arrays to 60 plus. Actually, our arrays, the big ones coming in, are around 100 terabytes today. By doing this, we have reduced our energy consumption. By moving to the larger drives and the larger arrays, we've reduced our heat and electrical requirements by about 22% and our floor space requirements by about 34%. So, and one last thing here, couple last things. We're moving more and more to virtualization, so we're increasing our virtualization by about 67% this year. We are moving, I said we were going to look at archival this year, which we kind of a little bit remiss on that in the open side. We've actually purchased a product, a database archiving product, and our goal, our plan is to to add two applications this year, two big applications this year, to put them under the archival process, as well as implementing HSM type methodology on our flat files. And one last thing, two last things, dedupe. We're doing a proof of concept in the near future on dedupe for our backups in the open system, and our goal is to implement a dedupe methodology this year in our open system backups. And then one last thing on tape. We did a lot of things last year on tape. We reduced our silos. We reduced our drives. We tremendously reduced our electrical and consumption and our square footage requirements last year. And we're going to continue that this year. We're cutting down on our mainframe virtual tapes. We're reducing about 33% in our floor space requirement and about 28% in our heating and electrical requirement, just on the mainframe virtual tape environment. So we are doing an awful lot of things across the board in the storage arena. Just by advancing technology, we get the byproduct of becoming greener. So let me stop right there.
Excellent. That's really a lot of progress from what you shared at S&W, and I think a lot of that probably has been just being deliberate and some of this information coming, you know, to your attention. So that's, thank you for that setting that tone.
Dave?
Phil Bollinger, can you tell us a little bit about what you do at LSI and then what you've been working on around green and what you're seeing that's new and hot? And actually, before you do that, Claude, can you hear us okay?
Dave, did you see the email from Claude that he has tried to dial in three times and no one can hear him?
Okay, so he's patched into another line, but we'll eventually get him in here. So, okay, Phil, why don't you go ahead and kick off your piece, please?
Yeah, sure. David, let me check if you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay, great. This is Phil Bollinger. I head up the systems business for LSI, the Ingenia Storage Group. That also includes the server-based RAID products that we have as well. So we're an OEM provider of storage platforms, building blocks ranging from controllers to complete systems and the software stack that accompanies that. And we provide that through major OEMs into end markets. And so a lot of the technology that Daryl talked about has key advances and products coming to market to drive energy efficiency. That's a lot of what we focus on. And I wanted to update a couple topics that we had chatted about in the S&W forum. One of the things that we talked about a little bit was kind of this green hype cycle, and I'm sure a question on everybody's mind is, with the current economic downturn, what has that done regarding the focus on energy efficiency and green in general, and the motivation of the supply side of this equation to bring those products to market. And from our point of view, from my point of view, it's probably accelerated the end of the hype cycle. You don't hear a lot of talk anymore about carbon credits and things like that. I think as Daryl walked through his excellent list of things that JCPenney's pursuing to drive energy efficiency, it's about economics. I mean, I think we would all ascribe to the fact that, the social responsibility side of green is important. I think we all want to be good stewards of resources, but the engine driving this in the industry is the economic side of this equation. And, as Daryl said, it matters, and it matters greatly. Millions of dollars in an enterprise as big as JCPenney can be saved. One of the things that LSI is very passionate about is the standard side of green. We believe that, as users and our customers and the industry in general gets more focused on delivering real energy savings, we've believed for some time that it was very important to collaborate with our fellow travelers in the industry to bring to the industry standards for measuring power consumption. And a couple developments since S&W. SNEA has been working a lot in this area. There's a green storage initiative and a green technical working group underway in SNEA. And in January, I think it was January 21st, SNEA released for public review a specification on storage taxonomy and the idle power test specification. This essentially was the document that you know, that got us, that attempts to get everybody level set on a standard way of defining power consumption, a standard way of referring to how power is consumed, and then a specification for measuring an idle consumption by a storage platform. And that's going well by all accounts, and is in public review right now. Anyone can go out there and look at that. What's also in flight and more complex by nature is the active power test specification and the metrics that go around measuring active power. There's a working group in SNEA underway. There's proposals from member companies such as ourselves and others. We're in the process, as are other storage system providers, of testing these standards in our labs and testing to make sure that, you know, the standards that we put forth regarding power consumption can be measured in real world environments and readily by customers and our customers as well. I think right now a lot of the debate in the active power test specification is over, you know, not only how to measure power, but what are the important characteristics. There's really two dimensions of power. You can either look to minimize power at a given work level, in other words, a given level of performance that you expect from your storage platform, measuring energy minimization to deliver to that level of work, or you can maximize work at a given performance, at a given power level. So really two different ways of looking at a similar problem, but that's kind of where the debate and the work is at in the industry right now. I think we would say it's probably at least, you know, maybe 9 months or more away from the active power specification being available for public review. But obviously everyone wants to try to accelerate that, and there's good work underway trying to get us there. So there's progress on the standards front. We're encouraged by that, and that's where a lot of our attention is on right now.
Excellent. That's great. Appreciate the update. That was just evolving last fall. It sounds like SNEA and others have made a lot of progress. Okay. Ken Osterberg of Seagate, what's new with you guys and you, and what's your focus been in the last several months?
Okay. Thanks, Dave. Well, this is Ken Osterberg from Seagate, and I run the enterprise product portfolio and planning on the enterprise. So this is really talking about, as Daryl said, he's replacing 146s with 300s. For example, that was an activity I probably started about 5 years ago to get us to that point. So it's about advanced planning, but I'd like to echo a lot of what Phil said on standards and green, because we've just recently got through T10 and just about through T13 with what we call power management on the disk drive side, which goes hand in hand with what Phil was saying relative to being able to trade off workload capability for power and power savings, both idle and active power savings. So that has taken up quite a bit of our time getting that through the SCSI standards, T10, and the SATA standards, T13. And the SATA standards would be important, you know, to use Daryl's vernacular, his Tier 3, which is those high-capacity drives, a lot of capacity per spindle, but also can be a lot of power there. So making sure that across the whole tiered portfolio that we can have power management capability in place for customers so that they can go off and make those decisions. The other piece, and we'll likely, Dave, I would imagine, talk a little bit more about it too, is as Daryl alluded to, Solid State Disk has an opportunity in the right environments to provide Tier 1 capability from a random I/O performance point of view with some dramatic, in cases, power savings. So we've also been working through that, and I think we'll see some developments on that in 2009 here as we go through this year. So with that, I'll stop with that.
Okay, thank you, Ken. And we're going to come back and ask some questions. As you guys remember, at S&W, the audience had a zillion questions, and we all leave as much time as possible. There are a lot of people on the call. I believe we've solved Claude's problem just in time. Claude, can you hear us?
I can barely hear. Can you hear you, Dave? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. I'll try to speak up. If you could as well, I'd appreciate it. So, Claude, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what IBM's been up to since the last SNW when we had the panel. I know you've made some introductions around Flash, and of course you guys are always doing a lot in green, but maybe you could update us on some of the activities.
Okay. So first of all, IBM didn't start our green initiative just last fall. We've been at this now probably, I guess, for a couple of years. I guess there's probably three major topics that I'd just like to reflect on, even though we have lots and lots of things going on. So first of all, IBM, not the storage product area, which is where I work, but the global services area, does considerable work with customers working on the data center layout, in particular from the question of where equipment is placed, what the actual consumption of equipment really is, elimination of hotspots, which tend to be a big drain on overall power consumption because they tend to drive overuse of air conditioning to cool the hotspots. So, you know, the entire question of layout, cooling, how workload is assigned within a within the data center, so that workloads that are non-essential can be turned off in the event of spikes in power usage or spikes in demand and price of power. So this first area is around services offerings for power optimization. In terms of storage products, some of the items that have already been mentioned a couple of times here now on things like SSDs, data deduplication, space-efficient flash copy, improved efficiency of power supplies in disk arrays, these are all considerations that can be addressed through technology. One other approach that we've been pursuing fairly heavily, particularly with our new line of disk arrays, the XIV array, is to emphasize the use of slower spin rate HDDs, so 7200 RPM HDDs, through a novel new storage architecture that allows maximum ARM utilization across the entire population of HDDs within the disk array. So the ability to replace high-performance HDDs with lower-performing, lower-power consumption HDDs for a large number of workloads. And then, of course, the notion of introducing solid state as a complement to high-performance HDDs. Just sort of one note, I think the gentleman from JCPenney mentioned that they were very aggressively looking at going entirely to solid-state disk to replace high-performance disk. I guess I personally am a little skeptical that the economics of that are going to work within, say, the next 2 years, but it's certainly an interesting area to go down and explore. And then the third sort of major area of energy efficiency is one of just actually storing less data. So there are products that help with the question of data management in terms of identifying data that should be removed or retired, not kept either on high-performance disk or in some cases not even kept at all, but using as part of a life cycle technique, managing numbers of copies of data or just plain eliminating data that isn't needed. And then the technologies of deduplication, ILM, of moving data further down in the hierarchy, all the way to shelf capacity like tape. These are all technologies that we've had in place for quite some time. One last thing to maybe mention is we are increasing the monitoring capability within our management software. The Tivoli software suite is increasingly becoming intelligent in its ability to obtain information at the moment from smart power supplies, so the intelligent PDUs that would be placed at a rack level. And in the future, as these things can be implemented into disk arrays and tape systems, actually measuring the power consumption at the specific subsystem level, and then providing feedback to clients so they can understand the dynamic details of their power utilization. So it's a big undertaking. Sometimes the flag at the top of the mast is power consumption, and sometimes it's optimal storage usage and CapEx reduction. But those two things go hand in hand. If I can physically use less storage and I'm saving power, in some cases there is a genuine CapEx
Okay, thank you very much, Brad. Let me ask again that you four-star your call if you don't have a mute button. And that will help us avoid any noise and feedback.
Okay, so we had a number of themes that came out there. Spin speed seemed to be a big one. Flash, we talked about, and that always gets a lot of attention. Claude, I'm glad you mentioned getting rid of data and sort of hierarchical storage management coming back into play here, even though it's been around for a long time. And this monitoring capability, it sounds like embedding monitoring capabilities within devices has some real potential. You also mentioned the flag at the top of the mast, and as Phil said, one of the questions we wanted to explore is how the economic downturn is impacting energy efficiency, and it sounds like that has had, if anything, a positive effect. I'd sort of like people's opinions on that. And then there's a countervailing trend, which is, of course, the price of oil, which dropped from nearly $150 a barrel last summer down to under $40 a barrel today. Has or will green be put on the back burner? Do any of the four panelists have any thoughts on that, those two issues? One is the economic climate and how it's affected energy efficiency, and two, do people just, are they not going to care anymore because the price of oil is dropping?
Well, this is Daryl. I think from our perspective, even though energy efficiency is going to save us dollars, I think the economic climate in some cases has caused us to slow down our movement that direction, because in some cases it costs money to save money. You have an upfront cost for that long-term savings, and I think with this economy we are definitely watching our pennies and only spending where we need to. So from a data center, from a store standpoint, we're slowing down a little bit.
Okay, so the economy has not accelerated your efforts around energy efficiency, but it sounds like some of those energy efficiency efforts are complementing your cost reduction efforts.
Yes.
And what about the price of oil? Is that a non-factor here, or is that something that organizations look at? Any of the other panelists see that in talking to your customers, or any other customers want to chime in?
David, this is Phil. I guess we don't hear that so much. I think all of us probably as consumers have reacted to, you know, the price of oil fluctuations, and you know, probably with, you know, the response in the consumer community probably was a lot like the response in the IT community. It's a factor, but it's not the first order event. I think, as Daryl said here, that, you know, in tight economic times, if anything, I think what it's done is it's just put a sharper focus, a sharper pencil on the return on investment of energy efficiency. There's real dollars to be saved, and, you know, and with prudent investment, you know, Daryl.
I can't speak. This is Daryl again. I'm sorry. I can't speak specifically for our logistics area, but I know when the price of oil was extremely high, they went through excruciating pain to improve our spend in, you know, with our trucks going around and things like that, shortening the routes, you know, improving the routing, that type of thing, to really cut down on our energy bill. And now that the prices have dropped, they're not going back to the old ways. So in some ways, the high cost of energy in the past has really been a benefit to us. It's forced us to improve our technologies and our methodologies, and we're not leaving those. We're going to continue down that road.
Okay, so the cyclicality of that natural resource and our recent pain has been etched in our memories for some time to come, it sounds like.
Yeah, people expect it to come back.
Yes.
Yeah. We also talked about a little bit about flash. I wanted to pick up on that a little bit. I know that David Floyer is probably in the call, and we've done a lot of work with guys like Pacific Gas and Electric, really trying to understand the impact of flash on energy efficiency. And we've talked to a number of customers and have some indications that clearly there's an opportunity to reduce the number of spinning disks and short-stroked drives, you know, to the order of 10 to 15 to 1, you know, spinning drives down to flash drives. Claude, you made some comments about pricing. I wonder if we could dig into this a little bit. Claude, maybe you could elaborate on some of those comments, and then we could have the other panelists pick up on that and tell us what they're seeing.
I'm sorry, Dave, I could barely hear you. Is that to me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me. Everybody can hear you fine, and you and I can't hear each other, and I don't know why, and I apologize for that. But you had mentioned something about, you had talked about flash pricing, and I think you had some skepticism in there in terms of adoption, but I can't be certain. That's why I was asking you if you could just elaborate on flash. In fact, Daryl up front indicated that they see some real potential, particularly with regard to reducing energy consumption. Maybe, Daryl, you could sort of reiterate what you said, and I'd be interested in Claude's comment, because it sounded like you were at the other end of the spectrum. So, Daryl, you were talking about, you guys felt like there was some substantial opportunity there. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't recall them off the top of my head, but I've seen some numbers on flash versus the power consumption of flash versus, say, a 146, and it's just astronomical, the decline, if that's not an oxymoron, in the energy consumption. So, and then the other thing is, and Claude, it is going to take us a while to get there, but our longer-term goal of having just flash and then high-density SATA drives behind that, that's going to cut our energy consumption by 90%, I'm a believer. And, yes, it's going to be 2, 3, 4 years down the road, but I think we're going to get there.
And Ken Osterberg of Seagate, do you have any perspective on that? Can you share with us some metrics, or do you have visibility on that?
Yes, I think I just heard Claude. Claude, was there something you wanted to say first?
The question of how much energy is saved on a byte by byte equivalence between flash and disk sort of depends on what type of disk you were using and how much of the disk capacity you were using. So on a pure device compared to device basis, the savings of flash of the kinds of drives that are available today might be about 2 to 1, maybe a little better than that. It certainly isn't 10 to 1. Now, if the comparison you're making is a short stroke disk, so I'm only using 10% of the disk because I need lots of IOPS and I'm expecting to use something close to 100% of the flash capacity. Okay, that probably is a fair, you know, big comparison of savings, you know, 5 or 10 to 1. So the question of how much you're saving sort of depends on how the disks were being used. But unless you're in this mode I've got a heavy IOP requirement, and therefore I'm doing short stroke discs. If you're in that mode, yeah, big savings. If you're not in that mode, probably not a lot of savings, you know, on the order of maybe a factor or two if you can get all the way there.
Right, and I think that's consistent. Is that consistent with what other people are seeing, that if you're short-stroking drives, you can consolidate them and save energy? Otherwise, the price disparity is just still too wide. Is that consistent with what folks are seeing?
Well, David, it's Ken Osterbrook here. We definitely are seeing that, and I would agree with the short-stroking piece. A couple comments, too, is as Daryl's talking about replacing his 146s with 300s, I'm assuming that's still back on the larger 3.5-inch form factor, and enterprise drives are rapidly moving towards 2.5-inch, which is roughly half the power of those larger 3.5-inch drives. So that power and also the cost is coming down. The cost disparity stays there. Today, I'd say we see the cost disparity in some cases at about 10x, and it, as Daryl said, it's rapidly coming down. I think until it gets to, on a dollar per gigabyte basis, somewhere in that 2 to 3x on a dollar per gigabyte basis, it'll remain niche. And then as it comes closer to that, it starts to have a ability to move over towards solid state in those key applications, especially that high transaction environment where that's desired.
Yeah, so I agree with the comment that was just made, and we expect that disparity to exist for quite some time. And as a result, we think that one of the important technologies is going to be management tools that allow automated data placement of the data that really needs to be on high-performance flash devices. So in the rollout that we're about to go through on our mainframe and high-end open-class subsystem, we have software that assists in the placement of data that specifically requires very high IOP performance and steers that data to SSD.
Yeah, we would agree with that as well. Automated tearing is going to be a very important technology. Coupled with the applications and the linkages between those two. Just a final comment, maybe not a final, but a comment on the flash power. I mean, it's more than just, you know, the watts comparison. You got to look at the two dimensions, right? There's a IOPS per watt and gigabytes per watt. In the IOPS per watt area, obviously, flash has a tremendous advantage, maybe 200x over a spinning drive. But in the gigabyte per watt range, that's where it's a much closer race, you know, in fact. More like 2-to-1 maybe. So there's a difference in depending what you're trying to accomplish with flash replacing spinning disk, and I think that's what the other gentlemen were emphasizing.
Great. Thank you. Now, one of the reasons we had agreed to have this call was that we had so much interest at SNW and not enough time for Q&A, so I'm going to stop and open it up to the audience. And the way we do this is if you have a question, please chime in, introduce yourself. If you don't want to give your whole name, just give your first name, and go ahead and ask your question of the panelists. So we have about 15 minutes of audience Q&A scheduled, so let's do that. Any questions? I have many more if nobody does, but I want to give you a chance. Oh, I should tell you. You need to 4-star... to unmute yourself if you don't have a hands free.
Hi, this is Joe Fermansky with UPMC. Can you?
Hi, Joe. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to hear from you. One of the things that I'm dealing with is looking at we're a whole IBM shop with all the virtualization things like that, multiple tiered software and that. But one of the things I'm dealing with is cost justifying the environmental management software costs and other things that allow you to take advantage of it, like intelligent PDUs. When you look at some of these costs at a low level, they're not a huge amount. You know, maybe you know, a couple hundred dollars more or to $1,000 more per individual PDUs or the licenses, these things can add up in cost, though, and I'm having trouble justifying the return of energy savings for the cost to put these things into monitor and manage them. Because we have done so many things already in the area of virtualization in the Intel world and in the AIX world, you know, we're running machines at full throttle, and we don't have lots of things we can turn down power on. But I'd just like to get some insight from folks on real-world justifications for these, because with the economic crunch that we're in, every dollar has to be looked at and said, what's it going to return and how's the hard return? When's that return going to come back to the bottom line?
So what about that? The cost justification of intelligent PDUs. Anybody have perspectives or experience with that?
So this is Claude. We've done some work with a number of different kinds of customers, and I guess I wouldn't say that there's a really huge pot of gold for everybody. You sort of have to understand issues like how well laid out is your data center? Do you really understand your the distribution of power and elimination of hotspots, et cetera? Has that already been done? If you're already very far along that curve, obviously intelligent PDUs is not the only way to get this kind of information. Some of the other issues are things like, do you have a lot of discretionary workload? Is there workload that can be, you know, timed for different periods of the day or eliminated in times of power scarcity? So I guess the question of how much value is there in specifically the intelligent PDU thing sort of depends on who you are and where you've been. But the one thing that I think actually is true for pretty much everybody is that a fairly deep understanding of how power is used in your environment, how power relates to workload and workload spikes, that's a core discipline that I think is going to be upon us probably forever. So with the big oil spike, we saw, I think, a glimpse of our future, and maybe that was a good wake-up call. Not that oil is going to cost $140 a barrel for the next couple of years, but it will someday. And getting ready for that is probably the right way to think about this. And having good control, good understanding of how your environment uses power, I think is going to be a good investment over time. Now, the question of payback, again, depends on how much of this you've already done.
Is Dave Scheffler on the call? And four-star unmute you.
Yes, I am.
Hi. Dave, I wonder if I could ask you, I mean, you're when it comes to cost justification, I think you've done as much as anybody I've ever met. Dave Scheffler runs a $100 million data center inside of EMC, and basically the story there was you guys needed more space, and you couldn't get it, so you had to make the data center more efficient, and the results were pretty impressive, the 60% reduction in space, 70% reduction in power, 70% reduction in cooling. Do you have experience with intelligent power distribution units, and do you have any thoughts on Joe's question?
We have just started really implementing them now. A lot of the things that we've done in our data centers are similar to what Daryl is doing at JCPenney. So we broke our projects really up into three tiers or three initiatives. The efficiencies of the individual components within the data center and all the things that go along with that. You know, he talked a little bit about doing CFD analysis. That was a big win for us to be able to eliminate the hotspots and make our equipment running in the data center more efficient by using the ceiling as hot air return plenums. Then all the smaller initiatives around, hot aisle, cool aisle, cold lock, making sure like equipment that it's generating a lot of power in one specific area is in one specific area. Then the other things, you know, similar things that we've done with our storage, you know, we were growing at 70%. I think a lot of people were growing at that rate. And we have five tiers that we've carved out within our data center. One of the things that I think he alluded to but didn't really go into much in depth is retention policies. So, you know, we looked at all our retention policies, and that was a big win for us. So putting things on disk libraries for shorter periods of time and being able to carve that out. And then the storage virtualization, we're at about a 20-to-1 ratio right now of our virtual servers, and we're looking hopefully in 2009 to be about a 40-to-1.
Well, thank you for sharing some of that. That, again, hearing some of the themes that Todd was mentioning in terms of moving data, getting rid of data, putting it in a more intelligent place. All right, other questions? We've got like 6-7 minutes here. I want to get some other thoughts here if you have them, or give you a chance. 4-star, again, unmute. Anybody have any comments, questions that they'd like to share with our panelists?
One last question, one last comment on this PDU discussion. Intelligent PDUs is not the ultimate technology here. I mean, ultimately, reporting will be done by all boxes and all subsystems. So intelligent PDUs is just sort of an interim technology. But the real long-term discipline and investment in monitoring software and monitoring process is going to have to get made.
Okay, got it. Okay, somebody had a question.
Hi, this is Catherine Winkler from EMC.
Hi, Catherine.
How are you?
Talk to you.
Yeah, I have a question actually about the slide that you had up on the site about the proportion of energy consumption represented by storage. I'm just curious if you can speak to that a little bit, why it differs so much from EPA, and perhaps if a gentleman from JCPenney could tell us if that's consistent with what he sees in his facility.
Yeah, so that data comes from a number of in-depth interviews we had it was predominantly larger shops, so we were definitely skewed toward the higher end. And I've had this discussion with guys like Andrew Fanera and others at the EPA, and which I think they would argue that they have a more representative sample of the universe, although, of course, our intent was to go at the big data centers and try to understand where those problems are. So that may account for some of the discrepancies.
Yeah, it might. Yeah, I was just curious because we're seeing such variable numbers.
Right. Right. And so we actually have had that debate. We feel like, you know, we may be too high, they may be too low kind of thing, and maybe more study needs to be done. But I that's why I sort of referenced 10 to 15%. Our data showed 15%, but we've had other feedback that, you know, could be low as 5 to 10%. But that's real data. Other folks, I mean, I don't know, Daryl, if you guys have tried to measure it down to the individual component level.
No, at this point, it's rather difficult for us to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key point there is that the storage is not the biggest culprit. You know, clearly that's the on the IT side, that's going to be the servers, and that's why virtualization is such a big hit. Any other thoughts on that anybody wants to add, or other questions people have?
Yeah, this is Nick Allen. Probably for Claude and maybe Ken, in the standards activities, anything happening about ways to classify data so you know where to put it? Anything new there?
So there's not a lot of standards work done on classification that I'm aware of. At the moment, the activity that's going on within SNIA GSI is around measuring methods for systems. They just published the method to measure system at idle, which from a disk perspective isn't really all that terribly interesting, but the next wave is systems under load, which should be considerably more interesting. But standards for data classification for the purpose of understanding performance requirements, to my knowledge, unless somebody knows something that I don't, I'm not aware of an initiative anywhere on that yet.
And Nick, it's Ken Osterberg here. I would also say at the device level, other than the object storage specification that was approved, and there's been very little traction on that at the device level. So there hasn't really been a lot of work on classification.
But there is a descriptor in the objects that's greenish, so to speak.
It could be greenish. It has that capability to move data around depending on response time and workload desired. So it could probably get to that.
Okay, thanks.
So obviously a very important question that Nick is asking. We think about slower spin speeds.
From a data perspective, what you want are attributes that describe the needs of that data from a performance standpoint, a retention standpoint, a copying standpoint, et cetera. And after that, the question is, how do you most greenly achieve that particular capability against that data? So data classification in terms of its use or its usage requirements, that probably is something that should be done.
Yeah, I would second that. I mean, a very important question I think that Nick is asking in that when you think about slower spin speeds or flash in the hierarchy or even getting rid of data defensively, having some kind of data classification system and ideally automated and a powerful policy engine and a good data mover, et cetera, are going to be fundamental to really exploit these technologies. I put that forth. Does anybody disagree with that out there? Is that mastering the obvious pretty?
No, I think that is essential. This is Daryl. I think that's essential for us if we want to move more and more to the, like, to our goal of flash and then SATA drives. The ability to have data movement is essential. It's a requirement. Otherwise, we can't move.
All right. Well, listen, folks, we are out of time here. We have to wrap. I, on behalf of the Wikibon community, I'd really like to thank our panelists today for taking time out of their schedules and share their outstanding insights. Daryl Molitor of J.C. Penney, Phil Bullinger of LSI, Claude Barrera of IBM, and Ken Osterberg of Seagate. And I'd also like to thank the other folks who participated in the call today, Joe Fermansky, Dave Scheffler, Catherine Winkler, and Nick. Thank you for your questions. As a reminder, within 24 hours, we'll have up on Wikibon 6 research notes pertaining to today's call with user actions. So look for that, and please feel free to hit the edit tab and approve the pieces or make any comments. We'll also be producing a podcast mashup of this call, and we'll be sending that out to you as well and posting it on the site. So thanks for listening today, everybody, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.